First, I'll have the panel take seats up above, and I want to remind the audience listening in that this is KPCW Park City, and you can tweet questions on the healthcare forum to hashtag PCHealth, or you can email us info@kpcw.org. Again, hashtag PCHealth to tweet us, or you can email us at kpcw.org. And we are assembling the panel. Let me remind you also that we will post this forum in its entirety on our website as soon as we can. It's a lot of it's a very big audio file. It will take us some time to process it, but we will get it up in the next couple of days at the latest on our website, kpcw.org. The panel is now assembled, and Bill Barnes, you are my guest on Mountain Money this morning, and thanks for joining us there. You're also the Director of Federal Relations for Intermountain, and I'll ask you what I asked you this morning, and that is, how could this rollout of healthcare.gov have gone so badly?
You know, that's really a good question. There's really not a good answer. I mean, there's really no excuse for it. There are some extenuating circumstances. It's a very complex issue because it's not just a single website. It's a different website for each state because, by and large, insurance is regulated on the state level, not the federal level. So I had to do, you know, 50 different versions. And, of course, the original vision was that the states would operate their websites. They had no idea that so many would opt out of doing that. So the job became bigger than they expected it to be. And, of course, they had a House of Representatives that was reluctant to provide the funding that it took to do it, and a bunch of governors who were not cooperative. So there were extenuating circumstances, certainly. But that being said, there probably is no excuse for how badly it started out.
Okay, onward and upward from there. And again, the news we heard from Greg is government now says a site works 90% of the time, which...
And there's errors at 0.75%, so less than 1% error.
So the 90% who get on are going to get a functioning website, which is the great news. Now, Carolyn Rose, you see patients at Summit County Health Department and run the nursing program for... the county. This is a different population. For one thing, we're one of the healthiest counties in America. I would think all the health insurers would be beating down the doors to insure Summit County's population. But on the other hand, we have a lot of uninsured. We have visitors. We have fairly low-wage seasonal workers who probably have not had good coverage. What does ACA mean for the Summit County work population?
Well, you're right, Larry. There are still going to be a lot of people who are not insured, or people who have maybe catastrophic, even though some of their preventive care will be covered. So what we offer and what we're planning on doing is trying to cover those people who will not have health insurance, which includes a lot of the workers of our ski resorts and the hotels and the restaurants. The other thing that we are looking at as our health departments across the nation is going and making contracts and agreements with insurance companies that we previously have not done. And therefore, we will be able to bill those insurances for some of the services we provide. I don't know yet, because we don't all know what's really going to happen, how all of this is really going to affect us. Right now, we're planning on continuing the services that we do for those people who cannot afford it, afford insurance, or who are undocumented and are some of our workers. But our federal funding is going down, definitely. Our grants from the federal government, we've seen five-year projections, and they're probably going down to pretty much almost nothing. So we will have to take a look at what kind of funding we can get from the state, or possibly more funding from the county. but definitely looking at our prices and what we charge, as well as billing insurance companies for any of the services that we do offer.
Okay, and I do want to invite you to come in the audience up to the microphone and ask your questions. Go ahead and step up now. Rob, you run Park City Medical Center and the Heber Center as well, I believe. And the uninsured now often will wait until something that was simple becomes very complicated, and then they come for health insurance through the most expensive door you have, which is the emergency room door. With ACA, do you expect that traffic to go down, that last intervention when somebody's really in crisis?
We certainly hope that it does. We'd like to see people get care at the level that they need it, not at a higher level or more expensive level. As we look at the ACA, a number of people will be insured that haven't been in the past, and hopefully that will allow them to get care sooner. There's a lot of provisions there that move payment on the front end for preventative and wellness, and we anticipate seeing more patients seeking preventative care, preventative diagnostics, your colonoscopies, your mammographies, those types of things, to find things earlier and hopefully provide better health outcomes for people at a lower cost overall. So I think that's the design and the hope of the plan. Time will tell how effective that is.
And right now, that is a lot of your charity care expense coming through the ER. So in a sense, this helps your bottom line, I would imagine, and makes it possible for you to use money in other ways.
Well, we hope that it will allow us to reinvest in different ways in the community, but the slides that Jason showed, you saw that over $627 billion will be taken away from current providers. So hospitals and physicians will receive less payment for the services that they do render, and some of that will counterbalance those who didn't have the ability to have their services paid for in the past. And there's some additional challenges that we anticipate will come with that, too. So we're going to see some significant changes. We hope those will be for the good, but I'm sure some of them will be painful.
Okay. We have an email question from Bruce Fryer. He says, as a patient, I have a right not to share my medical records with Select Health if I pay for medical services myself. Has Intermountain implemented this into their electronic health record system yet? And if not, when? And how does a patient request this exemption? That may be a question, Rob, either for you as administrator of the hospital, or also Greg Mattis, general counsel for Select Health. Who wants to take a stab at that?
You want to take a shot at it, Greg?
They're pointing at each other.
I think Linda might
okay,
be the best person.
Let's go to Dr. Linda Leckman with that one.
Actually, I'd like to, because I think that there's a little bit of a misunderstanding in regard to the purpose of the electronic medical record. The electronic medical record is used in a clinician's office and is used in the hospital. And the idea there is to capture all diagnoses, all medications, whatever's going on in terms of current illnesses, and to have that information available for whomever might have the responsibility of care. So if you are seen within a Intermountain Medical Group clinic and then end up in the emergency room, they will already have your records. As far as Select Health having access to that, I think that is a very, very limited thing, and maybe you could speak to that, Greg.
No, Select Health is compliant with that piece of the law. So, in fact, if you so indicate to the provider, that information is not provided to Select Health.
Okay, do we have a question from the audience?
Yes, I have a question. My question deals with future premium costs. Is there anything in the law that is going to restrict health insurance companies from increasing premiums should the cost savings that you were talking about with emergency rooms going down doesn't come through, and the costs and so much of the Medicare and Medicaid money not going to the clinics and the hospitals anymore, if they have to then send higher bills onto insurance companies to make up that loss, what's going to happen at the insurance company level with the premiums that come out to the rest of us that we're paying? Is there anything in the law that says a year from now, health insurance premiums aren't going to go up? Because I'm on a grandfathered plan right now, and when I called Blue Cross Blue Shield to talk to them about changing, to one of these plans, they said, you know, we think those plans might go up 96%. Just sit tight where you're at.
So. Okay, who want Bill Barnes? You've been involved in seeing this law written.
Well, the way insurance premiums are calculated, first of all, the insurance company calculates what it would cost to provide the level of service. The review process, there's nothing in the law that says premiums can't go up more than a certain amount, but there is a provision that state insurance commissioners and their departments review rates and have the right to tell insurance companies that's too much, you've got to lower your rates. And the insurance company has the right to decide if they're going to continue to offer that product or not. I would think 96% is maybe a little ambitious. Hopefully a lot ambitious.
And Greg Mattis, do you have anything to add from Select Health?
There is. Part of it is uncontrollable because part of it depends, as your question suggests, on what actually happens. How much uptake is there? Because insurance companies can and are justified to charge the amount of rates that are based on what the experience is out there and what's happened in the marketplace. But Bill's point is correct that the insurance department under the ACA regulates that, and any increase more than 10% gets reviewed by the Utah Insurance Department for its reasonableness. And then those increases get posted online for people to review as they're comparison shopping and see who's doing sort of unreasonable increases. The second piece, and this has not gotten a lot of media, is the ACA has a provision called the regulation of medical loss ratios. And what it does do, and has done already, because this went into effect several years ago, is it regulates that excess profit-taking by insurance companies. And what it says is that insurance companies, you can't spend less than 80 cents out of every premium dollar in the individual and small employer markets and 85 cents in the large employer market on health care costs, on actual medical expense. And so you have to at least spend 80 or 85 cents out of that premium dollar. And if you don't, if you have more profit or margin other than that, you have to refund the difference to consumers the next summer after the end of the year. And some of you in this audience may have received checks from your carrier, and that's what that's about. And there have been, the first summer this was in place, $1.1 billion got refunded in the summer of 2012 for 2011 to consumers because of insurance companies having charged too much premium. And that's one of the unspoken success stories of the act, is actually regulating those rates and making sure carriers don't take excess profits.
And Larry, I can add some perspective from some other states. Some states have been more proactive in regulating insurance rate increases. Maine used to have public hearings about insurance rate increases. Massachusetts, I believe, does. In Colorado, they have a pretty rigorous review process. And just, I think it was a year ago, a rate increase from Cigna was knocked back down by the Department of Insurance in Colorado after several groups sort of showed that the rate increase maybe wasn't justified by some of what the insurance company was saying. That isn't happening in Utah right now, but there are examples from other states of where that has happened.
Okay, Monica Goodner is monitoring social media for us. And again, you can tweet questions to hashtag PCHealth, PCHealth, or you can email us at info@kpcw.org. And what do we have, Monica?
We have another emailed question from Doug Engfer. What coverage is available from Utah for Utah residents who spend significant amounts of time out of state or out of the country?
Who wants to take that?
I can answer from the expat perspective because I got that question at another forum. If you live outside of the United States for more than 330, I believe, days a year, which means you're only back in the States for 35, then you are exempt from the mandate to have insurance. And so that kind of is a disincentive for parents to send their kids away and maybe not invite them back for more than a month at a time, is the way it kind of came out.
Let me write that one down.
So the expat rule is, I think it's 330 or 335 days. I forget which one. You have to be outside of the country. And there are some interesting permutations on that for children serving missions, especially if they go back and forth. So for being in other states, there are some plans that do offer sort of cross-state flexibility. Although it's maybe you kind of have to look into it a little bit deeper to make sure that, you know, the providers and the networks are going to help you out wherever you are. Generally, you buy insurance or you use the marketplace in the state where you live, your domicile, and that is where, you know, your premium subsidies and so forth would come from. So it's not really the state you work. It's the state that you live in.
Okay, let's take some more questions from the audience.
Hello, I've got a question for you. I'm one of the army of seasonal workers that keeps the mountain running for everybody here. And we don't earn very much. And I'm looking at Medicaid, except now, once I've gone to the website, I've found that I'm not earning enough, and a lot of people are going to be in the same situation. So I was just wondering if you could talk about, there's a pending decision. I don't know how long it takes for them to make up their minds, but if you could talk about what my options are going to be, for instance, if I'm not covered by Medicaid. Thank you.
Go ahead, Greg.
You know, Jason referred to that gap, and it was an unintended consequence of the Supreme Court decision. And what happened is the Act anticipated that everyone, that Medicaid would be expanded and Medicaid coverage would be eligible to everyone up to 133% of the federal poverty level. What happened with the Supreme Court decision is that now there's this gap for those states that don't expand because the subsidies, thinking that Medicaid would be expanded, only come down to 100%. And so, you know, you're not alone. There are more than a few Utahns, tens of thousands of Utahns, who are potentially affected by that gap. There's a legislative task force which is looking at that issue right now. I think there's, and this is an oversimplification, but there's, I think there's a general consensus among industry stakeholders that Utah needs to do something to address that gap. What's the debate is about is what is that and what form does that take place? And there is a disagreement among stakeholders about do you do full expansion? Do you partial expansion of Medicaid just to address the gap? And there are some actually decent arguments on both sides of that debate, and there are some people who feel very strongly about that. But there is that issue is being addressed, and we're hopeful that Utah will make a decision on that soon. And it may be definitely not for the beginning of 2014. If that decision was going to be made, it would have been made by now, I would think. But hopefully the issue of that gap is going to get addressed by the legislature.
Any other comment from the panel on that? Bill.
Yeah, the legislative task force that Greg referred to actually narrowed it down to three options they're going to recommend to the governor just 2 weeks ago. And full expansion is not one of those options. One of the options is to do nothing. But the other two options are two different ways to provide expansion of Medicaid up to 100% of poverty for all of the kind of population groups, including adults without children. The governor has indicated he will not make the decision until after the legislature or without doing in conjunction with the legislature, so I think we can expect that decision probably by March.
Okay, we'll come to the audience for another question, but first, Dr. Lechman, in all those pages of that Health Care Act, does it change fundamentally the way a doctor and patient relate to one another? Is now Acme Insurance Company telling you how to practice medicine, or is it the federal government that's telling you how to practice medicine, or is it you practicing medicine?
Well, there is nothing in the Affordable Care Act that tells physicians how to practice medicine. What there is, and actually Rob Allen already referenced this, just by providing insurance to folks who do not currently have it, opens up the possibilities for those people then to develop a long-term relationship with a primary care physician so that they can have better health. And that's really what physicians want. They want to be able to take care of people, to take care of them when they have chronic diseases, to take care of them when they're ill, and perhaps more importantly, to be able to keep them healthy. And as you saw in the information that Greg provided, some of the additional benefits in the Affordable Care Act come from extending preventive care through insurance policies so that people can preemptively take care of themselves. A second one is the parity in regard to mental health services. And what that means, and I would just mention to you that about 60% of the visits to a primary care physician have a behavioral health component to them. And if a patient knows they do not have coverage for that, then they're not going to seek help for that. So overall, better care for people comes from some of the additions that are there through the way health insurance is being offered. The other thing I would add, though, and I actually like the title, you know, talking about health reform overall, because one of the things in the Affordable Care Act is a provision for something you've probably never heard of. It's called an accountable care organization, and it sets up requirements for physicians and hospitals to take full financial accountability for delivering the health care for a population, Medicare patients. And the importance of this is not specifically the accountable care organizations, but what is important here is that CMS has defined quality measures that need to be met. And to the extent that physicians are held accountable, as they should be, for providing high-quality care as an outcome of this, that is a very positive thing. And it's not only clinical quality measures, it's also patient satisfaction measures and things like that. So that's some of the impacts.
Okay, I have more questions for you, but they can wait. Let's go back to the previous Medicaid question for some comment from Carolyn.
Just so that you know, there is health care available for you even if you do not have any type of health insurance. And if you're living in Salt Lake, and I know some of our mountain resort employees live there, there's community health centers that go on a sliding feed scale. Up in Summit County, we do not have a community health center. The health department, we try to help that a little bit, but it's more for women's services and immunizations. And then the People's Health Clinic is located right in the same building as the health department, and they will see you for chronic conditions, blood pressure, diabetes, that sort of thing. So there is somebody available for you.
Okay, now some more questions from the audience. Go ahead, sir.
Type 1 diabetic, treat with an insulin pump, and have Select Health, and they are no longer covering me. So I applied for healthcare on the website, and they referred me to Medicare. I'm not eligible for Medicare or Medicaid, and I don't know where else to go. I'm being denied by everybody. So, you know, without health insurance, my diabetes is about $2,200 a month. And when Greg started speaking, the first thing he said was, everyone's covered, and I'm being denied. You know, I just don't know what else to do.
What kind of coverage did you have?
Through Cache Valley Electric.
So it was from through your employer?
Yeah, and I get laid off in the wintertime and then I work on the slopes, but I'm a surveyor during the summertime.
So beginning in January 1st, you will have guaranteed issue coverage in the individual market. You might lose your group coverage, but as Jason suggested, you can go into the marketplace and purchase individual coverage regardless of your medical condition.
I've already done that. They've denied me. They told me to apply for Medicaid.
So you came in under the 100% of the federal poverty level then? You made too much money. Well, I don't think there's a limit on making too much money. Basically, if you earn between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty limit, you qualify for a subsidy at healthcare.gov. If you make under 100% of the federal poverty level, you can still buy the insurance, but you don't get a subsidy. Over 400%.
I made too much money for the Medicaid, but the marketplace offered me nothing. They referred me
To Medicaid.
Yes.
Okay, I see. You made too much for Medicaid.
Well, there are, and you cited some examples of resources, facilitators. What would be your advice as a next step for people?
I'm on my fourth appeal right now.
Well, there's a couple of options. One is to go to TakeCareUtah.org. Find a navigator, a certified application counselor here in Summit County or down in Salt Lake that can sit down and walk you through the process. They might know some things about it. You know, it's a complicated process, just like doing taxes, and sometimes they know some tricks that you might not have seen.
I spoke with one of your representatives at Arches today for 3 hours.
Okay. Well, they're actually not affiliated with us. They're actually with a health plan. The second option is the Primary Care Network, PCN. It is a current program here in Utah, a Medicaid waiver program that provides preventative care, including diabetic, insulin, things like that. There's a cap on the program in terms of the number of people who can be in it, but they're extending it throughout 2014, it looks like, until this Medicaid expansion decision happens. So PCN, or the primary care network, would be an option where you would get, for I think $50 a year, some basic preventative care coverage, including insulin for your diabetes. That's PCN. There is a cap and an application and some income requirements, but it does extend to people who make too much money for Medicaid currently in Utah right now. And the third option are the sliding scale clinics, the federally qualified health clinics, primarily in Salt Lake County. There's none in Summit County, as Carolyn mentioned. There's also the People's Health Clinic is here, in Summit County, that can offer, again, sliding scale, reduced payment to get you the medications that you need. Medicaid expansion, though, I think would probably be the option that would provide the surest insurance for you. And again, that probably won't happen until, if it does, January 1st, 2015 in Utah.
That's a long time to spend $2,200 a month.
It is. It is. And I can tell you that Colorado and Nevada and California and New Mexico and Arizona have expanded Medicaid, but Utah hasn't.
And that's
I'm just still where I began, really. I mean, easy health care, it doesn't seem like that for me.
Yeah, well, I would love the chance to talk to you. The story doesn't completely, I don't understand your complete situation, so I have to talk to you further, and I would be happy to stay after to talk to you about your individual situation.
All right, great, thank you.
And I think most of the panel will stay, and we can continue socializing after we go off the air, and our intention is to carry the forum until 8 o'clock, so it's 7:30 now. This is KPCW in Park City, and we have about a half hour to go and quite a few questions from the audience, so step right up and ask away.
I have a question. As a small employer, a small business employer, so we're not required to provide insurance, but we do. We have employees in Utah and other states. How do we go out and see if we can get better premium rates compared to what we're currently paying for our employees?
Have you tried Avenue H?
Now, would Avenue H apply to those employees that aren't in Utah? So my question is, how do I kind of get company coverage even though I've got employees in different states?
I gotcha, yeah. My understanding is that Avenue H is for Utah-based employees.
I think they might have some crossover to Idaho, but maybe not all plans.
Yeah. So that's a good point. But if you, the individual outside of the marketplace, there definitely are small employer plans that provide coverage outside of the area.
Okay.
And so if you've got employees at different states besides Utah, the best option may be outside of the marketplace.
So just sort of doing rate comparisons with other providers. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, ma'am.
While I'm listening to all these, it's complicated. I'm a senior, and since about mid-July, I have been receiving phone calls to have someone come to my home to evaluate my health. Now, I have a primary caregiver, and I'm basically take care of my health. So I declined this invitation to come to my home, and now I'm getting letters saying that they are sorry that I declined that, but they would prefer that I did have someone come to my home and evaluate my health. With all the struggles we're having financially with this, what are we doing? And is this a mandated law? Is this something in the Affordable Health Care Act that's rising to the surface?
Who's approaching you? Is it a government agency?
It's through my Medicare provider.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yes. One of the things about Medicare plans, and particularly if it's a Medicare Advantage plan, is that the insurer who is carrying that receives a certain amount of money to cover your health care. And all of your diagnoses basically need to be on record. And if you have more disease burden, then they get paid more. So they want to come to your house and they want to talk to you so that they can make sure everything has been captured. Now, I know that sounded a little cynical the way I said it. The reality is, it is good for everything to be available. Now, it may well be that your primary care doctor has already done that, And in that case, you know, you can continue to take your stand. There is nothing that says you have to have someone come to your home.
So it's not mandated in the
affordable health care.
Would it be advised to talk to your primary care physician about whether or not a visit is warranted?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's always a good idea to have a good relationship with your primary care doctor, and talking about this might put your mind at ease also.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.